give us a taste of where all these teachings we call Buddhism is leading to, namely leading to that happiness which we call peace, and how that happiness increases the more we become peaceful. Again, this happiness is described by the Buddha as that happiness which is a release from afflictions. I just, before I came in here, I noticed somebody coming out of the toilet with a smile on their face. That's one type of relief from affliction. Actually, essentially, the practice of meditation is very similar. That sort of feeling of tightness and tension, not in the bladder, but in the mind, is of desire and aversion, of busyness, is released through meditation. And it's that peace, that happiness of release. In order to gain that happiness and release from peace, not only does one need to do practices like meditation, but one also needs to have some understanding about what we call Dhamma. Dhamma is not religion. Religion is something which is presented in books as views or ways of describing things. This word Dhamma is something more essential. It's more like the truth which is ever present around us, like the air. But like the air is kind of invisible, so we don't see it. We miss it, we take it for granted. And sometimes it needs just someone to point this out to us, that this air all around you, which you breathe, which you rely on for your life. When someone points it out, we begin to notice these things. In the same way, the Dhamma, the truth, nature, is there around us all the time. No one owns it, no one can sell it, it's there, but sometimes we miss it, it needs to be pointed out. If we did understand the Dhamma at all times, the truth, the nature, then we would be what we call enlightened beings. Enlightened beings is someone who, through that understanding, has passed beyond all suffering. Someone who, through that understanding, has got this inner peace, this inner serenity, which is not affected by anything which happens to you on the outside world. Now, when we talk about the Dhamma being something like the air itself, it is something which you can see for yourself once it's pointed out. It's something which is always there, but because we don't want to see it, we miss it. In particular, the Buddha started talking about three types of Dhamma, which if a person could only understand and see clearly, would be enough to make them fully enlightened, would be enough to bring them to the same state of enlightenment as the Buddha himself. And those three characteristics were the truth, or the Dhamma, or the nature, the essential characteristic of all phenomena, of impermanence, of unsatisfactoriness, and of the lack of a self or a soul inside there. The element or the characteristic which I wanted to explore this evening is sometimes one which we think is the most obvious, which is the element of impermanence, change. But it's because we think it's so apparent that we take it for granted and we don't notice it. If we only understood impermanence to its limit, if we understood it fully, then again, that by itself will be enough to make us fully enlightened. That by itself will be enough to overcome every problem in your life, in your existence, to give you full understanding, full freedom, full enlightenment. Just by understanding impermanence. So let's look at impermanence on all levels of our experience. Of course, most people, when you talk about something like impermanence, all they see is the impermanence of the external world. But even there, they miss many factors which are impermanent. I wanted to talk about this just because of its great use in all aspects of our life. Whenever we have a problem, whenever we have any difficulty or suffering, you can always take it for granted that there's something in there whose impermanence you're neglecting, that you haven't seen. That suffering is arising from fighting that change or denying that change, struggling against the change which is inherent in nature, which you cannot stop, but which you can only become frustrated in trying to stop. Change is inherent in all things, but we take stability instead as the truth. The very mundane and easy way of understanding the truth of impermanence, the Buddha gave a very simple story about a king who, whenever his realm was in harmony and prospering and in peace, he would think he never needed to do anything. He thought it would always be this way, and so he would hold a party. And he would party and not do any business to maintain that peace, that harmony, that prosperity of his reign. And because of his negligence, that the country became poor, lacked its harmony, lacked its prosperity. And then when the country became full of problems, he became so depressed and despondent that he just locked himself in his room and never come out, depressed, sullen, despondent. And his ministers decided that this was no way that the king should run his country, but they couldn't exactly tell him. They had to find a way of teaching that king about the law of impermanence, so that the king, understanding in this way, could run his country more responsibly. And all they did was to create a ring which they asked the king to wear on all occasions. And all that was written on that ring were the words, "This too will pass." And the king agreed to wear that ring, and when the country was going well, when the people were happy, when the economy was prospering, when there was no problems with law and order or external enemies threatening his borders, he would always look at his ring and remember, "This too will pass. It won't always be so good." And that meant he never got so euphoric that he never lost his sense of responsibility, that he worked hard, knowing that that state of affairs, that wonderful state of affairs, would not last. He worked hard to try and keep that state of affairs going as long as possible. And when the country started to decline, when there was a lack of prosperity, and there was trouble in the kingdom, internal and external, then again he would never get despondent. He would look at his ring and again remember, "This too will pass." And that gave the king a sense of the meaning of impermanence. When he never got too happy, he never got too depressed. He kept what we call serenity in his mind. And with that serenity, he could work. He could work for the well-being of his country. And by keeping that serenity, he was working for the well-being of himself. Wouldn't it be wonderful if each one of us could have a ring like that? Do you ever get depressed and upset when things aren't going well in your kingdom, in your realm? Do you ever feel like throwing a party when you've passed your exams, when you've just fallen in love and got married, when you've just got your new home and have a party, when things are going well? Of course, this is what we do. And that means that we forget this law of impermanence. We lose ourselves. Just a few days ago that I had the great privilege of going to a funeral. It was one of the neighbours of our monastery. His wife died of cancer. They married in 1952. 42 years they've been together. And you can imagine what the man felt, having lost a wife of 42 years, who'd always been with him. He felt very strange, very lost, as if half of himself, or more than half of himself, had suddenly been taken away from him. There's no need to feel like that, if we understand impermanence. There's no need to go to those great degrees of depression, despondency, grief, if we'd kept impermanence in our mind beforehand. One only has just to be in that cemetery, this time in Fremantle, and just look around you, just to see all of those gravestones shouting out the truth of impermanence. All those people who lie, well, their remains lying underneath those gravestones. Many of those gravestones are so old that the inscriptions on them are fading away, and one can hardly even read the names anymore. These are people whose lives have been like ours. Now, not even their relatives are alive, their sons and their daughters, who could remember them. Not even the name which was inscribed on marble remains. Not even any part of their bodily parts remains. It's all gone, the whole life, just like yours, no longer to be remembered. It puts our existence in a perspective. If one understands about the impermanence of the external world, one knows that whatever one looks at outside, one can never possess. A possession is something which we understand inside of us, is something which we have, which we control, which we will always have. It's different than renting. If we own a house, we think it's always ours. If we rent it, we realize it's only ours for a while. Its real owner will one day take it back again. How many of us think that we own a body, that we own a wife, a husband, a child, a parent, in the sense that they'll always be there? Again, when we understand impermanence, we know that whatever there is outside will only be there for a while. Now, when we talk about this law of impermanence, sometimes there's a resistance to looking at it, to contemplating it, to accepting it, because it challenges us and it brings initially a state of fear up. I don't want to understand that. I don't want to look at that. I would rather have the delusion, even though I realize it's a delusion, of that person always being there, because I think that the alternative would be unbearable. But the point is that the alternative is not unbearable. The alternative of facing up to the Dhamma, to accepting the Dhamma, to realizing the Dhamma, is not a state of negativity, it's not a state of depression. In fact, negativity, depression, fear, grief comes from not facing up to the Dhamma of impermanence. It's only when we have thought for years and years and years that this person will not die, will not leave us, they will always be here, no matter how irrational that is, that when the time of parting does come, that it comes as an enormous shock. As a shock which creates great suffering inside of us. That suffering is not necessary, that suffering can be alleviated, but it can only be alleviated beforehand by understanding impermanence. Before the crisis. When we understand impermanence before the crisis, we know we don't own anything. We know that whatever we live with is only there for a time. We know this every moment, and so when the parting does come, it does not come as a shock. We understand this is nature. Again, suffering comes from denying nature. When we deny nature, we get angry at nature, which is a usual response when we have a great trauma, like a loss of that which is dear to us. Whether it's a death, whether it's a job, whether it's a limb, whether it's anything which we thought we possessed and it's suddenly taken away from us. It's the grief which gives rise to anger, In fact, we want to blame something or someone, and that something or someone can even be ourselves. I was at fault. If only I had done something differently, this parting would not have happened. That anger is just a response which is like fighting nature. When it's understanding, we don't fight nature, we understand it. We realize that this is nature, this is irresistible, this is unfightable, this is the way this world is. We understand it. Understanding gives rise to acceptance. Acceptance gives rise to this sense of serenity, of flowing with nature rather than trying to fight against it all the time. Flowing with nature is the result of understanding impermanence. Fighting it, struggling against it, grief, anger, depression, is a result of denying nature. So, it's very important for us, if we want to be someone who lessens our suffering in this life, who are happier human beings, more content human beings, more serene human beings, to understand as much as we can about the impermanence around us. Whether it's one's car, whether it's one's new Dhamma hall, I can already see the cracks appearing in the walls. This is a new Dhamma hall, but it's already falling apart. This is the nature of external things. As soon as you have them, they start falling apart. They start decaying. And you know it needs constant maintenance, constant propping up to keep it going, to keep it working, to keep it clean, to keep it tidy. Can we not see the nature of impermanence in the things around us? They constantly need propping up. That's why there's so much work involved in fighting against impermanence. Do you want to live a peaceful life or a very busy life? If you fight against impermanence, you'll find you lead a very busy life. If one learns to accept it, one can learn a very peaceful life. But a lot of people stop just there, the impermanence of the external world. One also, in Buddhism, in the Dhamma, if one really wants to attain freedom and liberation, it's also important to look at impermanence in the inside world, in the internal world. Many people can, with a bit of a struggle, with a bit of understanding, accept impermanence of the outside world. They can eventually let go of the externals, whether it's their house, their car, their job, their wife, their husband, even their body, they can let go of. But the one thing which we find very hard to let go of is, if you like, our inner body, our mind, our reputation. And the Buddha said, even inside of ourselves, all you can see inside there follows the same law of nature, the same law of impermanence. Every idea which arises in your mind fades away. Many years ago, in our monastery in Thailand, a lady used to come to visit the monks. She was an American lady. And now and again she would come to bring gifts. And she'd always like to talk to the monks. She was an American born-again Christian, a fundamentalist. And she was looking for scalps. And she would come up and be very nice and give gifts. One day, eventually she came to the crunch, what she was really after. But one day, she went up to one of the monks, he told me this story, being very nice and very pleasant. And then she thought that he was ready for the punchline. Then she looked him straight in the eye and said, "What would you do if Jesus Christ came into your life?" And straight away he just said, "I just watch him rise and pass away, like anything else which is impermanent." And she never heard that answer before. Even ideas and thoughts which arise in the mind pass away again, don't they? Even if Jesus Christ came into your life, he'd pass away again. Whatever arises passes away and disappears. If we look at inside of our minds, Can we actually notice the great change which is happening inside of us all the time? First of all, as I was talking the last time I gave a talk here about the mind, about the internal world, the first thing we can look at inside is the feelings. Painful feelings, pleasant feelings, neutral feelings. Can you understand that these are impermanent? They change all the time. It seems obvious, doesn't it? Of course we understand they're impermanent, but look in practice. When you hurt, when you've got a physical feeling of pain in your body, do you really look at it as impermanent, as changing? If you did, that feeling of pain would not affect your mind. You would look at it as something which has arisen and will pass away. You will look at painful feeling as just a gap between two pleasant feelings. It's just feeling changing. You would look at pleasure, happy feeling, good feeling, nice feeling, as just a gap between two painful feelings. Again, just feeling changing. Because that's all that pain and pleasure is. The changing of physical sensation. If one can really see this and understand this, whenever you are in pain, the feeling that I can't bear this any longer will never arise inside of you. You are bearing this now. If you weren't bearing it now, you would become unconscious or you would die. You are bearing it now. The problem is the thought that it's going to be like this in the next moment, for the next minute, for the next half hour, for the next day, for the next year, and I cannot stand this in the future. That is the fear which arises with pain, and that is what makes it unbearable, or it appears unbearable inside of us. If you had a pain inside of you, and someone came along who you could have faith in, and they said, this pain is only going to last 5 minutes, or 2 minutes, or 1 minute, it would make it bearable. You know it's going to pass, you know it's going to end. All pain does end, it comes and it goes. Again, it is just a gap between two pleasant feelings. Pleasure is a gap between two painful feelings. You know that pleasure will last as well, will change as well. If we know this, we are like the king with his ring. He looks at the empire, his realm outside, just as he looks at the realm inside. When the realm inside is full of unpleasant feeling, pain, then he realizes this too will pass. And so he doesn't lock himself in a room of depression or anger, but he does what he needs to do. He does his duties and responsibilities in spite of the pain. He knows it's going to pass. He knows it's only the change coming and going which he's experiencing. Whenever he gets great pleasure inside of him, he never really thinks that this is, at last I've reached what it should be. At last this is reality. At last I've got it. He doesn't party. He knows that this too will pass. And so, whether it's a painful feeling inside the mind, or a pleasant feeling inside the mind, knowing impermanence, he has or she has serenity. No matter what you're experiencing. If one can only understand impermanence that much, the feelings inside the body would just have no power to affect the mind. One would be able to bear with them, live with them with no problem whatsoever. One knows that this is just the coming and going of feeling. The next part of the mind, which is also subject to impermanence, is the perceptions one has. The perception one has about another person. I like you, I don't like him. Now, next moment, I don't like you, and I like him. Have you not seen perceptions changing like this forever in your life? So how can you get really angry at a person? Sometimes you like them, sometimes you don't. This is just perception changing. This like and this dislike is just the manifestation of impermanence in the realm of perception. What foods do you like? What climate do you like? What countries do you like? All the preferences which run our lives, which are like tyrants governing our lives. If we can only understand that this is just the flow of impermanence, we would just let them be, let them go. The thoughts inside of our minds, the next category inside of our mind, all of these thoughts, these great ideas we have, the great plans we have, the great judgments we have inside of us. This is the right way it should be done. Have you ever had that thought inside your mind? This is the right way, and you've got it wrong. Now listen here. And have you ever found out, maybe one day later, 2 days later, that your idea has changed completely? And what you said you didn't want to do, today you say, is the only way, this is the right way of doing things. You're wrong again. Even our ideas about how things should be done are in continual change. Our problem is when we do not realize that change, identify with a particular idea, view, hold on to it, delight in it, and there we cause suffering inside of us. All of the mind inside is in constant change, is in constant flow, which means that we cannot rely on any of it. We cannot delight in any of it. The Buddha said that delighting in things which are in constant change is trying to hold on to things which, by their nature, are moving away from you. It's like trying to grasp onto the wind which is moving through the gaps between your fingers before you've got a clutch on it. If one knows about the truth of impermanence, of change, the true result, the unavoidable result of understanding impermanence is not attaching. Not attaching to things in the outside world, not even attaching to things in the inside world, like bad feelings, good feelings, like preferences, like perceptions, like even thoughts inside. Imagine what it would be like if one could let all of this go. If one could, instead of fighting the mind and fighting the world outside, one could learn how to flow instead. The idea of flowing with impermanence can be illustrated by a simile which I've given here before. It's a simile of the basket below the hot air balloon. Some of you might have been ballooning. I never have, but people who have had that experience have told me that when you're sitting or standing in the basket below the balloon, it is so peaceful there. It is so quiet and still. Because even if it's a windy day, even if the wind is extremely strong, no matter what way the wind is blowing, the balloon travels completely with that wind. The area of the balloon is too large that it has to go completely with the force of the wind. And so, below in the basket, you feel no wind at all. No resistance. No suffering. So this is one of the results of understanding impermanence, flow, whether it's pain in the body or happiness in the body, whether it's good thoughts in the mind or unpleasant experiences, all of these one can flow completely with. But what is the usual result of not understanding impermanence? The usual result of not understanding impermanence is clinging and clutching on to all that is pleasant and dear and lovely in the outside world or the inner world, clutching on to it for to grim death, holding on to it, not letting it go, and anything which is unpleasant, fighting it, trying to run away from it, trying to escape from it, overcoming it, rather than learning how to flow. In the flowing, there is release. In the accepting, there is freedom. Sometimes, people, I noticed at the funeral ceremony which I went to the other day, that people said that the grief was just a measure of the love that man had for his wife. But when one really thinks about it, you probably know the understanding, the explanation of the Buddhist idea of love, which is much closer to the idea of acceptance, embracing what I say as embodied in the phrase, the door of my heart is always open to you, no matter what you've done. This is a phrase which was taught to me by my father. He didn't actually say that. The way he said it was, the door of my house would always be open to you, no matter what you do. He said this when I was a young boy. I realized later it was the very marvelous expression of unconditioned love and acceptance. No matter what I did, he would always love me, always accept me. The door of his heart would always be open to me. That was the expression of true love. Even if I died, the door of his heart would always be open to me, no matter what I did. Real love, real compassion, is not just to a person, but it's to life. Can you really say that you love life? That you embrace life? That you really live life to the full without denying part of it? To really say that you love life, surely one has to say to life, the door of my heart is open to you, no matter what you do, O life. It's loving life with no strings attached. Are you getting the meaning here? It's loving the whole of life, accepting the whole of life. Only when there's that pure, true love there, is there peace, is there serenity. It's the love which embraces understanding. You know, if my father had told me, I'll only love you if you don't upset me, if you don't do things which make my life a misery, like dying before me, then would that be real love? If you said to your husband, to your wife, I will only love you if, you know, you love me back, if you do this and if you do that, if you stop those really irritating habits of yours, which I've told you about umpteen times and you haven't listened, is that really true love? Now we're talking here about something which is far deeper, far more profound than ordinary common or garden love. This is like the Buddhist idea of love, the Dharmic idea of love, the natural culminating of where that love is leading to, the pure, the ultimate love, which is accepting. If we can only accept life and death, if we can only accept nature, the whole works with impermanence included, we can say to the whole, the door of my heart is open to you as well. No matter how you are, the result of that is this great peace and acceptance. And just like it means that you can start to live with other people when you have that attitude of acceptance, of tolerance, the door of my heart is always open to you, no matter what, you find you can start to live with life when one accepts impermanence. If one denies impermanence, this truth, this great law of nature, you'll find that sooner or later you will have disappointment, frustration, grief, despair, anger. Because whether one likes it or not, this is the truth of our existence. You don't need to believe this, one can see it all around. And the suffering comes from not accepting it. If we can only flow with this truth, accept it, understand it, it brings release. When we understand impermanence, we can live with people and we can also let them go. We can live with the things in our mind and we can let them go. Pain, pleasure, happy moments, unhappy moments. We can live with them all and we can let them go. We let them go because we realize we have no choice. It also engenders a sense of awe at life. The awe at this ever-constant changing of life. It does not mean that we don't appreciate life. Indeed, the more we understand that life is always flowing, the more we understand that moments are slipping through our grasp so quickly, it means we spend more time appreciating those moments, being with those moments. If we would only realize that the people we are with will not always be here, we would care for them more. As I said here before, the only time we take things for granted or people for granted is when we think they're always going to be there. If the people you were living with, if you realized, or if one thought, or if one was told that they're only going to be there for another day, would you care for them in that last day? If you realize that one day they're going to go, it means that every day becomes more important. Not only does impermanence give a sense of serenity, it gives a sense of more fullness in one's daily life, of putting in more into what's going on, because everything is passing so fast. It gives a sense of being alive, existing. So this sense of impermanence, this idea of impermanence, this constant change, has very important lessons for each one of us. If we can spend time understanding, reflecting on this, one does feel this sense of peace, this sense of stillness. Very similar to the sense of peace and stillness which you find inside of the mind. When one understands impermanence, again, one doesn't cling on to things, one doesn't attach to things. One lets things go. When one lets things go inside of the mind, one has this marvelous sense of peace, this marvelous sense of stillness, this marvelous sense of for once not fighting the world. It's that fighting, the denying of the world, which creates that tension. There's a war which goes on in people's minds. And it's a war which goes on very often. It's a battle between, as I say, the way things are and the way you want them to be. The way things are and the way you want things to be. What do you want right now? Is this the way things actually are right now? Can you see what I mean between the saying of the battle between the way things are and the way you want things to be? How on earth are you ever going to solve and settle that battle? Who is going to win? The only way to resolve that battle between the way things are and the way you want things to be is actually not to change the way things are. This is nature, this is the Dhamma, this is the law. No one has been able to change the law of impermanence and change it to suit the way we want it to be. It happens in spite of us, in spite of our wants and desires. The only way we can settle this war and have this sense of peace inside of us is actually to change the way we want the world to be. when we attach to something, not understanding the law of impermanence, when we get this attachment which sometimes is confused with love, this attachment to someone, we always want them to be there. This is not the way things are. When is that war between the way things are and the way we want things to be? Can you see that that's the nature of suffering? How about changing our wants, changing our attachments, and saying for once that I will accept the way things are. I'll accept the nature of life. I will move my wants to be in accord with what nature actually can provide. If one can do that, then the war is over. The strife, the struggle of life, of existence, ends. The world, the nature, the Dhamma, is in complete accord with how one wants this life to be. One can flow through life, one can accept life and death as it really is. Another example of the nature of this life, of impermanence, another word for impermanence, another translation of that word is uncertainty. I told this story just the other day as a result of the experience at the crematorium. It was a story told to me by a monk in Thailand many years ago when I was staying there. This monk lived in a forest, and his hut in the forest where he lived was built in a very simple fashion out of bamboo with a grass roof, or it's a grass roof covering it. And in the forests of Thailand, now and again, especially during the monsoon season, there can arise great storms. And you can imagine a person living in such a fragile dwelling. If a tree or even a large branch fell on that dwelling, it would offer no protection at all for that monk's life. When the storms came, there was one night, there was a terrible storm, and the monk could not sleep for fear of his life. He did hear trees and branches falling with a loud crash around him. Fortunately, no heavy branches fell on his hut, and in the morning he went outside to see the damage in the forest. And of course, the first things which he noticed were the trees and the branches. But what took his attention was some of the leaves which were scattered around in between the branches and the fallen trees. So he noticed of those leaves which were lying on the forest floor that most of those leaves were brown, old leaves which have lived their life on a tree to a ripe age and, in the storm, had fallen off. But also, as well as those brown leaves, he started to notice some yellow leaves, which hadn't really reached their full time. He also noticed some green leaves. And he even noticed some very young green leaves, which have got that vivid greenness of a leaf which has probably shot forth only one or two days before. They too had been torn off the tree by the storm. And looking at the nature of a storm and how it tears off various leaves from the tree, he got an insight into the nature of life and death of human beings, which I hope you can understand as well. But just to confirm his insight, he also looked up at the trees to see what leaves were left. And of course, what one would expect is what he saw. Mostly on the trees were green leaves. Leaves which were still strong enough to cling on to the tree. But even though very young green leaves had been torn off from that tree, he also noticed brown leaves on that tree. He even noticed some very old curly brown leaves still clinging on to that tree. Have you ever noticed the old brown curly leaf-like people who are still clinging on to life? When young children die. When he noticed this, he realized that Dhamma, nature, this is like the law of impermanence. You know, he could not say that something had gone wrong, that a green leaf had been torn off and an old curly brown leaf still remained. Nature had not made a mistake. This is the way nature is. This is part of the law of impermanence. When a wind blows heavily through a tree, it does pick off mostly the brown leaves, and it leaves some. It takes off a few yellow leaves and leaves a lot. It takes a few, very few green leaves and leaves a majority. And it even takes off one or two young green shoots. Nothing has gone wrong. This is nature. When he understood nature, he could accept it. When he could accept it, he could understand it. When he could understand it, he was free from fighting it. And in that freedom from fighting nature came the peace of serenity. Understanding impermanence, the flow of things, means we accept, we understand, and we are free. So, whatever one looks at in one's life, whether it's things outside or things inside, have a look upon them in respect of this law of impermanence, of change, of unreliability. If it's pain, if it's unpleasant, if it's something which one does not like, understand it's going to change. And this pain, this unpleasantness is just part of that change. And if it's something pleasant, if it's something which is really wonderful, please remember that king and do not throw a party and think it's always going to be like this. This too will pass. In that way, one can keep this serenity, this great peace of mind, which is indeed a happiness which is outside of the winds of nature, which is there all the time. It's the happiness which we call peace. So, it's time to end the talk this evening on impermanence. Now is the time for any questions on the talk which I've just given. Are there any questions on some aspects of the talk which either one didn't quite understand, or which I didn't cover completely, or which you disagree with? Has anyone got a question to ask about the talk? Thank you. You notice that even praise doesn't last. But I value it when it comes. Have you ever been blamed unfairly? You don't like it, do you? Have you ever been praised unfairly? I never say anything about that. Praise and blame, if one understands impermanence also, one can keep serenity. It's very dangerous if one has praise, and doesn't understand impermanence. One can see that with people like champions at sports, people who are successful in business, people who are successful as politicians, getting all that praise. And then when blame comes, which it has to eventually, instead of saying, "I've been expecting you, blame," they get upset. And if you're always getting blamed and blamed and blamed and blamed, it doesn't matter, one day someone will praise you. It has to come. When they do, saying, "I expected you as well." Praise and blame, happiness and suffering, they're all aspects of change. But thank you anyway. Yes. One way that the Buddha talked about this, he said that there's two like thorns in life. And he said for the ordinary person, when they don't get what they want, they have like two thorns. They've got like the physical feeling of pain. They've also got how it affects the heart as well. It's unpleasant for the body and it's also unpleasant for the mind. It hurts both. For the person who is enlightened, they've only got one thorn. If it's an unpleasant feeling outside, if they get sick, if when they're dying, somebody, I remember just someone told me this today, that they asked, forget who the person was called, say, "Are you afraid of death?" And he said, "Well, at this point, no, I'm not afraid of death." He said, "But when, because I'm not close to death yet, when you get close to death," he says, "you usually don't feel very well." "And when you get very close to death," he said, "you feel bloody awful." Excuse the phrase. He said, "That's what I don't like." That's externally. But internally, like the enlightened person does not fight that which cannot be fought, that which cannot be conquered, which is nature. If it is nature, it is something which is outside your power to change. So, the enlightened person is just someone who understands that and accepts and is therefore at peace. It's an interesting experience if everyone does have a strong physical pain inside of one. And if one can just for a few moments leave it alone, let it be, stop fighting it, stop trying to get rid of it, stop trying to escape from it, stop trying to overcome it, it gives an enormous sense of peace and stillness. Sometimes people have done that. Someone told me a story of someone in Australia many years ago in the mines up north. His job was blasting the face of the mines in the middle of the night on night shift, because that was when the rest of the people weren't working and it was too dangerous to blast when there were other people in the shaft. It was only a small mine. He went down there one evening, drilled his holes and was ready to put in the explosives when he heard a sound of something coming towards him. It was one of the trucks carrying the ore. Someone had forgot to put the brake on and it was just hurtling towards him. In the narrow confines of the end of the mine, there was no place to hide. As the big metal truck hit him, all he could do was to jump. After it hit him, he fell to the ground. He found he couldn't stand up. It had taken his legs off. His enormous pain, in the darkness he'd lost his light, had to wait for quite a few hours before the first shift would come on. And he said he had the most wonderful peace he'd ever experienced in his life. Sometimes it takes that amount of pain, that amount of disappointment, that amount of frustration, to actually come to terms with Dhamma, with life. Because we really have to. And when we can accept that which most of us would think, how on earth could you be at peace? You can find this enormous serenity. So that's what I mean by saying that the two barbs, there's a physical pain there, but the mind is completely still, completely at peace. There's nothing you can do. You rest, full acceptance. Or, the other word which I used, was love. Which is, again, acceptance. The door of my heart is open to you, no matter what you do. Does that answer your question? Sort of. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there this evening. There are a couple of announcements to make, as usually is. Is Gil here? Who's making the announcements? Hang on.